And in Brooklyn at the Music Hall of Williamsburg, it's The Presets and Walter Meego. And here's the quote of the day. A penny saved is a government oversight. If you want to see more shows, just go to WUSB.FM and click on the concert billboard. And if you want to tell us about a show, you can email us at scene@WUSB.FM. Thank you for listening to the concert billboard and to WUSB Stony Brook.
And it's it's 2 minutes after six, and you're listening to WUSB in Stony Brook, where it's time once again for Off the Wall. Good evening, everybody. The program is Off the Wall. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this Tuesday evening. And wow, what an ass-kicker of a week this has been. It's been nonstop activity of one sort or another, and I've got a lot of stories and things to tell, and maybe we'll take phone calls later or whatnot. Wow, I hurt myself. I'm feeling pain right now due to tremendous exertion that came over the weekend, and I'll demonstrate it. I'm going to stand up and you'll... Ah, that hurts a lot. I mean, it doesn't hurt as badly. I got to sit down again. Ah. Yeah, you know, it's right above the knees, you know, and that thigh area. It just hurts like the dickens. And it comes from exerting yourself a lot. It hurt more yesterday than the day before. It's getting better. But, you know, you realize... You think you're somewhat in shape because, you know, you do various exercises and you walk a lot and things like that. But if you do something else, something slightly different... Then you find these other muscles that have been ignored for a while, and they get really angry that they've been woken up, and then you got to deal with that for the next few days. But I think by tomorrow, everything will be pretty much back to normal, and let's move on to the next thing to complain about. And speaking of things being back to normal, well, I guess this campaign is about to end, right? I mean, seriously, tonight's the last primary. I remember that we talked, I think it was exactly 3 months ago, when the primaries were being held in Texas and in Ohio, and Texas, just to be cute, had a caucus on the same day. And it was deadline day then for the magazine, 2600 Magazine, that thing I'm affiliated with. And that's the same position I'm in right now. It's deadline week. Everything's going crazy. I have to run around and make sure things are done and not sleep and things like that. And wouldn't you know, this damn campaign is still going on. I don't think anybody in their right mind or in an insane state of mind would have guessed back then, 3 months ago, when we were talking to people from Texas and Ohio about where this thing's going to end, that it would still be going on 3 months later. And that the very last day of the primaries, June 3rd, people would actually still be paying attention, and that somehow the states of South Dakota and, what is it, Montana, actually matter. Yeah. and of course they do. I'm not saying the states don't matter. Although, to be honest, I can't understand why anybody cares about Puerto Rico. I'm not dissing Puerto Rico by any stretch, but they can't vote in the election. I don't know who set this up so that they get to vote in the primary, but they can't vote in the election. Who thought of this? Who thought of the whole system? One day I'll find out. Fire off an angry letter. But yeah, it's It's coming down to the wire. It's not really coming down to the wire because everybody knows Obama's going to win the election. I think win the nomination anyway. I don't know about the election. But it was months ago. We were the first, WUSB here in Stony Brook, was the first major news organization to call the race for Obama. And I think that was before Ohio and Texas, wasn't it? It was around that area. And it's just incredible to me how the powers that be have blithely ignored that, the fact that we called the race for him, and have continued as if there was still a chance that Hillary Clinton could catch up to him. Well, it's not happening. It's not going to happen. And in fact, it's reflected in today's news. If you look, I mean, there's so many variations of the news too. I'm looking at the front page of CNN right now, and look at this: Cheney apologizes for inbreeding joke. Oh, I just don't have time for that right now. But talk of Clinton quitting is 100% wrong, according to the Clinton camp. And then above that is another story. Saying that Hillary Clinton says she's open to being vice president. Well, which is it? You can't have it both ways. I mean, if you're quitting, that means you're not running for president. Now, you don't like the word quitting, okay, but it is quitting. You would be a quitter if you quit the race at this juncture in time. Yeah, it doesn't sound good when you say it quite like that. Hillary, the quitter. Quitter Clinton. No, it's... look at this. Bill Clinton, sorry for scumbag remarks. What's going on out there? Has everybody lost their mind? all the politicians and elected officials are just going completely mad. Well, you know, it's the people, I think, that have earned the right to go completely mad after all the nonsense we've been through. But yeah, it's going to end. My prediction, I don't want to spend too much time on this because I have so many other better things to talk about. But here's my prediction, okay? Barack Obama does not have enough delegate votes tonight to take him over the top. Don't have enough. But if certain superdelegates weigh in, and it doesn't take very many of those, then he's over the top. That's what's going to happen. That is what's going to happen. What you will see tonight is, if not an outright withdrawal from the race, a very conciliatory speech from Hillary Clinton. That's what I believe will happen. Now, if superdelegates do not step in tonight at the stroke of 10 o'clock when the primary is closed down and cast their votes and put Barack Obama over the top, they will do so tomorrow. Because nobody wants to keep this going anymore. It's like a bad TV show. It's like the last season of All in the Family. You know, you just want it to end already. It was fun while it lasted, but it's done now. Let's kill it and move on. So I think that's how everybody feels, and people will, if I had the power, if I was a superdelegate, or if I was 10 superdelegates, I'd be casting my vote. Okay, I'd wait till the states cast their votes so as not to step on their supposed say in the matter. But after that, let's move on. So my prediction, by this time tomorrow, 6 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, there will be a nominee for the Democratic Party, and that will be Barack Obama. That's my prediction. And if that doesn't happen, my God, what in God's name is going to happen? Maybe a recount for the entire nation or something. I don't know. So that's where I think we're going to wind up. It was fun. It was a lot of fun. Now I can hardly wait for the election, where we go through even more torture. But maybe actually there'll be some change. Maybe something cool will happen as a result of that. Historical day, very historical, and the end of an ordeal. All right, I mentioned I got hurt. I'm going to go into details to how that happened. What an amazing series of events. Well, I assume we've all in our lives at some point had something happen to us that we thought was just simply an incredible stroke of fate. You know, it's like, wow, I can't believe that just happened. What an incredible coincidence. Or, you know, it's just something you wouldn't have anticipated. Now, I'd like to maybe draw a parallel to television, because it's always fun to do that. And television, after all, is what guides us through our lives, helps us establish our values, how we address one another, what we do, what's normal, what's not normal. And so if you look at television and you look at what's portrayed there, the kinds of stories that are told, the kind of emotions that are displayed, then you know if what's happening to you fits within the greater scheme of things, whether it's believable. So now when you see something happen on television that's unbelievable, you say, that's bad writing. That's not... It just couldn't happen that way. It's just not possible. And television is supposed to reflect real life, even in fiction. So you can't have things, scenarios that are too wild, too crazy. All right, case in point, the TV series Lost, one of my favorite shows, actually. But it has so many weird coincidences going on. And those of you who have watched the show, you know this. All sorts of things that just you wouldn't think are possible at all. Just to very briefly fill you in on what it's about an airplane that crashes right off the coast of this weird, mysterious island that nobody really knows where it is, and basically they're stranded on this island, and there's all kinds of weirdness going on the island as well. That pretty much sums up the program, and they do all kinds of other things afterwards. But, okay, in that scenario, you've got various characters. Two of the characters, Jack and Claire, have the same father. They're on the plane. They don't know each other until the plane crashes. One is from the United States, one is from Australia, but they have the same father. That's a coincidence. That's unlikely. That's something you say, nah, that's not possible. Or another survivor of the airplane crash, known as Mr. Echo, came from Africa and discovered, while being stranded on the island, the wreckage of a small plane that happened to have the body of his brother on it. His brother had disappeared earlier, going to some other part of the world, and somehow had crashed on the very same island. That's unlikely. That's not something you really expect to have happen. But there it is. Or, okay, one of my favorite characters, Sawyer. His father killed himself because he was ripped off by some unscrupulous businessman who turns out to be the father of another stranded person on the island, John Locke. His father is the same person that made Sawyer's father kill himself. Wow, all these coincidences, they just keep happening. So is that bad writing or is that something else? Well, this weekend, I had something happen that made me just sort of question everything. It all started, actually, with another coincidence. I woke up on Friday, turned on the news, see what's going on. I always like to see what's going on in the world, see whether it's worth getting up. And I noticed that there was yet another crane accident in New York City. We have these cranes that are building buildings, and they're always falling down. I don't understand it. But literally, this has been happening. I can think of three accidents in recent memory. There's one downtown, there was the big one in Midtown, and now this one on 91st Street. And when I turned on the TV set and was looking at the footage of this, I said, wow, you know what? I know that street. I know that street because that is the very street my friend lives on who I agreed to help move tomorrow. Yeah, so he's moving out of his apartment on 91st Street between 1st and 2nd Avenue, the very same block where this crane fell. That's a coincidence, no question about it. That's the kind of thing that doesn't happen very often. But it does happen. I mean, it's sort of... coincidences do happen. It's a part of life. Like, there was this woman who was hit by a lamppost at a Thanksgiving Day parade, was put into a coma, and she was, I think, visiting from some other state. I'm not sure I have all the details right, but it was at the Thanksgiving Day parade, a balloon, a float, hit a lamppost. It fell, knocked her on the head, knocked her unconscious. I think she might have gotten a big cash settlement, which allowed her to move into this high-rise building on the East River, where an airplane piloted by a Yankee pitcher a couple of autumns ago crashed into her very apartment. Now, that's a coincidence, too. Not a very good one, but these things do happen. So it's not just me. I know that. So now I was faced with the situation where, okay, you know, I have to help this guy move, and the reason I have to help him move is because I've got the 2600 van. You know, the 2600 van is used for moving people many times, probably more times than anything else. And so it was all planned out. We were going to spend the day moving furniture. A lot of fun. But the question is, okay, now you got this crane that collapsed on the street. What do you do? How do you get past the crane? How do you move somebody out of an apartment on the very street that's affected? I mean, of all the streets in Manhattan, all the streets, imagine, they go up into the hundreds, all the avenues. It has to be that one. Not just the street. It doesn't have to be just 91st Street, maybe between, whatever other avenue it could be, between Park and Madison or something like that. But no, it has to be between 1st and 2nd. Has to be there. So, okay, fine. I accepted that coincidence, but we weren't sure if it was going to actually work out. If the whole street was going to be closed or something like that. So basically, to make a long story short, make this part of the long story short, we found out that, yes, in fact, you probably could get a van in. It was closed on the First Avenue side because that's where the crane actually fell. But I could come down the Second Avenue side and pull in that way. Now, Second Avenue, mind you, is already in tatters because they're starting work on the Second Avenue subway finally. So that road is all over the place. It's very hard to get around. And on top of everything else, they had First Avenue closed because of the disaster. Below 86th Street, they had Second Avenue closed because of a street fair. So you had this weird, bizarre mix of calamity and festivity within a block of each other. And that, my friends, that's New York right there. Cross 86th Street, misery. Cross the other side, festivity. It's wonderful. So anyway, I had to drive the van, and the van is very hard to drive, by the way. It's a 1981 Dodge Ram manual transmission, no power steering. It's not easy. So I'm driving down 2nd Avenue, and because of the construction of the 2nd Avenue subway, they've made the exit from 91st Street onto 2nd Avenue a single tiny lane. Usually it's about two or three lanes, but it's just one single tiny lane. So I can't exactly just back into that. It's surrounded by all kinds of construction material. The only way to go in is to go in the wrong way. And there's a cop there. There's a cop at the far end of it with a little barrier that's checking people's IDs to make sure that only people who live on that street can go down it. So I knew as soon as I started driving down the wrong way, the guy was going to stand up and go, "Whoa, stop there," you know, and get all crazy, and I'd have to explain the situation, say, "Look, I'm moving my friend out. It's the 31st of May, last day of the lease. He's got to move out, blah, blah, blah." And I was expecting all this. But you know what happened instead? As soon as I started going down the street the wrong way, the cop took one look at me, stood up, and opened the barrier. Yeah, he just opened the barrier like he was just some guard and I was somebody who belonged there. And I realized, you know what? That old phone company magic still works. The front of the 2600 van, after all, is painted like an old New York telephone truck. But you know what? Those trucks have not been around for 10 years. Those colors don't mean anything anymore. But apparently to various people who were around back then, it still triggers this memory that it's the phone company, it's authority, let them go wherever they wish to go. So I'm like, okay, great. Didn't even have to say a word. Just pulled right in. It gets better. Now, my friend's apartment was on the north side of the street, and that happened to be where this whole herd of cops was hanging out. The street was filled with policemen and women, and none of them had any idea what they were supposed to be doing. They were just told to go there. Now, every time I've seen a crowd of cops, it's been under unpleasant circumstances. It's for a demonstration of some sort or to close off an area, and basically it's the cops versus the people. But in this particular case, the cops were the people. They were just kind of milling about, conversing, smoking cigarettes, talking on their cell phones, complaining about the rent and their rate of pay and various other things like that. It was just so bizarre to see all these people hanging out in uniform and not doing anything really cop-like. But as it turns out, they were all in exactly the place where I wanted to back the van up to. They were right in front of my friend's apartment. Now, I didn't want to jump out of the van and approach 50 cops and say, "Hey, could you guys please move?" So what I did instead was simply start backing the van slowly into the crowd of cops. Not something I'd normally do. And my van doesn't make that little beep-beep noise when it backs up. Just if I'm lucky, the white light comes on. So I just started backing up very slowly, and you know what? The cops dispersed. I made a crowd of cops disperse just by backing a van into them. It was one of the greatest moments of my life. It was incredible. All of a sudden, everything was topsy-turvy. And the cops weren't authority figures. They were people, and I was the person who was supposed to be there, and they had to move to suit me, and all of a sudden, everything just felt really good. So we spent the afternoon moving things downstairs from a fifth-story walk-up. Now, that might not sound very difficult, but believe me, it is. It is very difficult. When you have to carry boxes and boxes filled with books down five very narrow flights of stairs where you can't even see your feet in front of you because they're blocked by the box that you're carrying, and then you have to go back up five flights to get the next one, it is very, very tiring. And I challenge anybody to do this and not feel this. And the thing is, nobody else was helping. It's just two people doing all this work. Two people. And psychologically, it was very troubling, because clearing out this apartment slowly. The apartment is very small, so there wasn't really a way to pack everything. You started packing things, and there was still a lot left to go, but there wasn't any place to put another box, so you had to wait for a box to leave before you could put more stuff in the box that hadn't yet been filled. And so that was psychologically damaging, because it just felt like we weren't getting anywhere. And it was also, just to make things even worse, the first humid day of the year. So we're sweating up a storm, going up and down the stairs, and just feeling like this is going to take forever. And keep in mind, we've got to drive to Brooklyn and carry all this stuff upstairs. It wasn't a very cheerful mood that was prevailing at that time, even with all the cops being festive downstairs. Now, it wasn't enough. Would have been nice if more people were there. Would have been nice if it wasn't so humid. Would have been nice if there wasn't so much to move. So anyway, on one of the steps back, one of the trips back up the steps, up to the five floors, we passed a neighbor of my friend who stepped aside for us. And as we passed by and continued to go up to the next flight, something very strange happened. The neighbor, who I had not even made eye contact with, other than to just say thank you for letting us go by or whatever, the neighbor uttered my name. You know, that other name, the one that I was given when I arrived on this planet, that one. He uttered that name. And I was like, whoa, he knows my name. Okay, it must be somebody who reads the magazine or saw the film or a TV thing or is following my modeling career or whatever. So I'm prepared to have, like, one of those kind of conversations. And as it turns out, this guy, who was living next door to my friend, same floor, and had been living in the same apartment for 10 years, and my friend had been living there for 5 years, he had grown up with me on the very same street, in the very same section of suburbia that I talked about on this show a few weeks ago, where I had accidentally run into somebody. And we were talking about old times, including this person. This person had lived in the same building, on the same floor, to my friend for 5 years, and the only possible way that we would ever have found out about this incredible coincidence is by going up and down the stairs as many times as we were doing on Saturday. And it made me wonder how many other things like this are going on, where some incredible stroke of fate is happening right underneath your nose and you don't know about it. I mean, had there been more people helping, had it gone smoother, maybe if the crane hadn't fallen, we would have moved things out faster and wouldn't have passed this guy in the stairs and never would have known that the same person that I spent years with on the same small street in suburbia lived next door to a friend of mine so many years later. This is somebody I hadn't seen in over 20 years. Now, if something like that happened on Lost, I think I would say, you know, this show is just too unbelievable. Things like that can't happen. I mean, think about it. Think about not only the number of streets in Manhattan, think about the number of apartments in Manhattan. What are the chances of two people that you knew well in your life completely independently winding up right smack next to each other for so long? Makes you wonder that life is in need of some better writers, you know, some more imagination as far as mixing things up a little bit. The random seed generator is gone askew, or I don't know, something just doesn't add up. I hear about coincidences. You know, I expect to run into people on the street all the time. That makes sense. People walk up and down streets constantly. You pass all these people every day. So odds are, at some point, you're going to see somebody that you've known at one point in your life. Now, I'm very bad at this. As I've mentioned, I can't recognize people's faces, especially from years ago. And I'm amazed that I look even similar enough to what I looked like way back then that somebody could recognize me. And it's only after somebody identifies themselves that I look at them and say, oh, yeah, you're right, you are that person. I never take the initiative because, to me, too many people look similar to other people and I always make a fool of myself. But in this particular case, wow, this has to be the biggest coincidence ever in my life. I can't think of anything else other than, of course, making it to this planet in the first place, which isn't really a coincidence. That's just kind of a victory over the millions of other possibilities that could have happened. So, yeah, we spent quite a bit of time discussing things. Actually, and it sort of worked out because he carried a box downstairs for us, which made us feel a lot better. But I caught up, told all the same stories about various other things going on in the S section of Stony Brook, which, believe it or not, it seems to be sort of, not to make it too self-important or anything like that, but it does seem to be sort of like the focal point of the world. All these things seem to be coming out of there. You know, I was watching this this television program over the years called King of Queens. It's one of my favorite shows, actually. It's got Jerry Stiller in it, and this guy, Kevin James, who's the lead and actually writes the show and produces it, turns out he lived in that section, too. I was watching that program independent of that, not even realizing this, and one day I just happened to click on his name in Wikipedia, and right there it says he grew up in the S section of Stony Brook. This is not that big a section. What's going on over there? All these people seem to be coming from there and then coming back together later in life. It's like something is in the works, and I don't know what it is. And, on top of everything else, this guy's brother is best friends with him, so it's really very trippy situation. So that's pretty much the story as far as coincidences go. I just was blown away by it. I'd like to know if other people have had similar things happen to them ever. Something that weird. I mean, I've heard stories of all kinds of things where, you know, twins run into each other 50 years later by accident, or wind up dressing the same or something like that, but this is different. This is very random. I can't believe I just used that word. So anyway, to finish the story about the moving, which really isn't all that interesting, we managed to get all the stuff to Brooklyn. And wouldn't you know, no, I didn't run into another former neighbor of mine over at the new place, but we did run into a new neighbor who was actually able to help us carry some of the stuff up the stairs. It was only 3 flights going up the stairs, but you would not believe how much easier it is to unload and to carry things up a staircase than it is to empty out an apartment and carry everything down. And I think the reason for that is it gets exponentially harder the more floors you go up. We're only going up 3 floors as opposed to going down 5 floors. And also exponential is the fact that you have one person helping you. So you have 3 people rather than 2 people. And the psychological issue of clearing out the van, which is a much smaller space than the already tiny apartment. But seeing that get emptier and emptier and realizing that, yeah, you know what, it's almost over. Psychologically, that really hits you. And also explains how I got injured, because, well, I didn't really get injured. I just strained myself by all this carrying and walking up and down stairs. I mean, I thought I was ready for this. And I finished the job, but it's a good thing I didn't promise anybody else I was going to move them the next day, because I could barely stand up afterwards. It's getting better now, but boy, that's something else. Never experienced anything quite like that before. I have to say, that day, I think I've worked harder that day than any day in memory or ever. I mean, what have I actually done that involved working so hard, climbing up and down all the stairs with heavy boxes of books? I haven't joined the military. I haven't run around in circles with somebody blowing a whistle, except in school, and that didn't last very long. So, you know, most of the hard work I do involves tapping at computers and writing things. So, yeah, this could very well have been the most exerting day of my life, and also the weirdest coincidence of my life, and my interaction with policemen as human beings. Never actually said a word to them, but still, it was kind of cool. And it wasn't over then either, because on the way back to Long Island, later that night, I was driving on the expressway, because the van is a commercial vehicle, can only drive on the expressway. I don't know what the logic behind that is. I mean, I know why 18-wheel trucks can't drive on the parkways, because the bridges are too low and they'll smash into them. But a van that's smaller than an SUV, just because it has commercial plates, it's not allowed on the Northern State Parkway or the Southern State Parkway? What, does it devalue the parkway somehow? Never could understand that. So anyway, I'm forced to be on the Long Island Expressway. I'm driving back. It's very late at night, something like 3 or 4 in the morning. And I see this guy in front of me who has no taillights. I mean, I've seen that before, but I was especially perturbed when I realized he didn't have any headlights either. This moron was driving with no lights on at all. Just driving blithely down the expressway. You know, I can understand on a city street, you're driving around and you forget to turn your headlights on because there are lights everywhere. But the expressway only has lights every few hundred feet or something, and it's not hard to figure out that your lights aren't on. Especially when people start flashing their lights at you and honking their horn and things like that. This guy, though, instead of turning on his lights or trying to figure out what people were doing, just started driving even more erratically. Started swerving from lane to lane and then started going at really high speed. So I figured, you know what, I'm through trying to hope that this guy is going to come to his senses. Something should be done about this. He's going to kill somebody, if not himself. So I called 911 from my cellular phone. And they picked up and asked me what was going on. I said, yeah, I'm on the expressway by exit 38 heading eastbound, and there's this guy driving with no lights on at all. He's driving kind of erratically and quickly. And gave him as many details as I could. He asked if I knew what kind of car it was. I don't have that ability either. I can't recognize faces. I certainly can't recognize cars. If it was a Volkswagen, I could tell you that. But I can't tell you anything more. Could barely tell you what color it was. And plus, it was nighttime, and he was getting further away, so it was very difficult to do that. He asked if I could read the license plate. I said, I'm in the 2600 van. He said, oh, okay. The van that can't go more than 55 miles an hour without tremendous strain. So they took the report. They said, okay, we'll deal with it. I figured, you know, I'd see the guy pulled over. And 10 minutes later, the cops call back. They call back from a restricted number and ask if I've seen the guy again. Well, what are the odds of me seeing the guy again? He's going faster than I am. The only way I'd see him again is if one of you guys pulled him over. Or if he flips his car and is in the middle of the street or something like that. So, you know, I knew he was still up there because I saw him way in the distance, maybe about 5 minutes earlier, but hadn't gotten any closer. For the whole rest of the trip, and that's through two counties, not only did I see the guy pull over, I did not see a single cop. There was one other instance in my life where I was trying to get the attention of cops, where I was a witness to an accident, a hit and run, and this guy was trying to get away, and I was chasing him in my car, going through red lights, trying to make sure that the cops got him before he got away, and finally getting a license plate, not seeing a single policeman the whole time. This was another instance. You drive on the Long Island Expressway, you see cops every place. But in this particular instance, not a single one. Not one. And I told them, I said, he's at this exit now, heading this direction, at this speed. Just find one of your guys, have him pull up two exits ahead and wait for the car with no lights to go by. Never happened. So in a way, it's kind of weird that you can get on the expressway, one of the busiest roads in America, and get on there with no headlights at night, swerve, speed, and have somebody like me report you to the cops with your exact location and still somehow get away with it. Kind of gives us all hope for whatever little crimes we're committing. All I know is every time my headlight burns out within 5 minutes, I'm pulled over. So, wow, that was something else. And there was yet another instance, too. I had to come back into the city the next day. Didn't take the van this time, but I had to come in to say goodbye to my favorite coffee shop again. Yeah, Hopscotch is closing, or has closed. Don't know what's going to happen next. But regardless, had to come in for that. And on the way back home, I saw this these headlights coming up behind me. And I could tell. I could tell they were coming up rather fast. I could also tell because the left headlight and the right headlight weren't exactly moving at the same time, that this was not a car. And sure enough, maybe about a half a second later, these motorcycles started going by at a speed of what must have been at least 110, 120 miles an hour. And boy, do they make a lot of noise. My window was open because it was still hot and I have no air conditioning in my car. It split my eardrum when these things went by. And it really rattles your nerves to have something like that happen, especially if you don't know they're coming. I had a moment's notice. And for the next minute or two, all these motorcycles going at that speed just went racing past everybody on the parkway. I was on the parkway now because I wasn't in a van. Yeah, I thought I'd get away from all the commercial vehicles, but instead I got all these motorcycles going 120 miles an hour. No, I did not call the cops again. What am I going to do? I mean, it's obvious if you see motorcycles going 120 miles an hour that that's what's going on, and any cop anywhere would know that. But no, they got away with it too because nobody got pulled over. And I don't know how you would even pull them over. There were like 50 of them. And you could only pull over one, and you'd have to catch them first. Maybe a roadblock or something, but that seems a bit extreme. So anyway, yeah, a lot of fun on the highways late at night. Have to check that out more often. So that was my week. That was most of my week, anyway. A good part of it, other than all the stress and heartache from working on magazines and organizing conferences and things like that. And, yeah, the conference is coming along well. We have all kinds of speakers. We're going to release more speakers, names of more speakers. We're not holding speakers hostage. We're going to release the names of more speakers later in the week. We already have quite a number, ranging from Kevin Mitnick to Adam Savage to, Stephen Levy, Fiber Optic. All kinds of people will be showing up. And some news we just found out, actually. Some rather distressing news. For those of you who have not yet made your reservations, well, you might have some difficulty. Oh, you can still get tickets to The Last Hope, the conference that is taking place, July 18, 19, and 20. More information at www.hope.net. But we're told the hotel has sold out. Not of rooms, but of the special conference rate. We only had a set number, but it was at least as many as we had last time. So, boy, a lot of people are registering, apparently. We're going to try and find cheaper rooms because, yeah, you can still get rooms at the Hotel Pennsylvania, but they're $100 a night more, and that's a lot, we know. If you go in with a bunch of people, maybe it won't be so bad, but we're going to try and look for alternatives. But, yeah, that's what just happened this afternoon. All right. Again, more updates on Hope.net as far as that goes. Any news on the nomination here? I'm looking at the websites on our very slow Mac. And looks like, Clinton is still open to being vice president. Let's not focus on that too much, because I'm sure we'll be hearing nothing but information on this race, which seems to go on forever. Oh, this is something I wanted to bring up. Actually, I wanted to read this a couple of times. You might recall a few shows ago, we got a call from a listener overseas, who had written a book. And the book has just come out. He sent us a copy. It's called The Time Waster Letters, written by Robin Cooper. You can get it in all the various places, bookstores, Amazon, places like that. It's basically, this is really cool. I've been having a lot of fun reading this. It's basically a way that you can waste people's time by writing them letters that they feel compelled to respond to, and then just getting sillier and sillier until eventually they don't respond anymore. I think that's the best way to phrase it. I'd like to read you a couple of examples, just to give you a sense as to where this is, where this book is going, because it really is brilliant as far as how it gets people to respond. Here's a letter to the customer services manager of a big outlet of some sort. Somewhere in England. So, you know, the addresses in England always have about 7 or 8 lines. You never really know what the... the company is called Next PLC. And it's written to Don Dury. Yeah, Don Dury. Dear Don, my son's birthday is fast approaching, but I am at a loss as to what to buy him. I have decided it is time Michael got himself a new wardrobe. But being his father, I know I'll only go out and buy all the wrong clothes. Hats, gloves, and countless silly scarves. With about 7 exclamation points after that. Rather than me spending lots of money on clothes that he will only throw in the bin, or even worse, burn, I think it's best for me to buy some of your gift vouchers. That way, Michael can choose whatever takes his fancy. Could you please tell me how I would arrange to purchase £10,000 worth of Next vouchers? I look forward to hearing from you. Yours sincerely, Robin Cooper. And that was dated on September the 1st of 1999. On September the 6th, 1999, the reply on Next Stationery. Dear Mr. Cooper, thank you for your recent letter. May I firstly say how pleased I am that you and your son have chosen to shop with our company. We would be more than happy to sell you £10,000 of gift vouchers. I would advise, however, that Next gift vouchers do have an expiry date, and remaining vouchers would need to be replaced annually. Also, lost or stolen vouchers cannot be canceled and therefore cannot be replaced. Therefore, for reasons of practicality, we would actually recommend a Next store card with the money credited to it. We would be able to offer 5% discount on the money credited to the store card, or 2.5% discount should you decide to purchase the gift vouchers. If you should find the store card option acceptable, then please contact Tracy Doodle, I love British names, administration manager at the Next directory, whereby the arrangements for payment, etc., will be explained. If, however, you still wish to purchase the gift certificates or gift vouchers, or have any further inquiries, please feel free to contact myself at the above address, where I will endeavor to assist in any way I can. Yours sincerely, Don Dory, customer service manager. Well, September 17th, Robin Cooper penned another letter to the Next company. Dear Don, many thanks for your letter of September 6th, replying to mine of September 1st. I was rather confused when I read your note, and I quote, we, parentheses you, would be more than happy to sell you, parentheses me, £10,000 of gift vouchers, unquote. £10,000? £10,000? £10,000? £10,000? Do you think I'm made of money? I wrote to you asking how I could purchase £10 of vouchers. £10, not £10,000. I can only assume that you have made a typing error. I do forgive you. We all make mistakes, not even I. Please, could you therefore advise me on how to purchase £10 of gift vouchers for my son Michael? I look forward to hearing from you again, and keep up all the fabulous work at Next Clothes. Yours sincerely, Robin Cooper. Well, was one more letter from Next. Dear Mr. Cooper, this is dated September 20th, 1999. Thank you for your most recent letter, and I was sorry to learn of the confusion you felt when reading our response to your gift voucher inquiry. At Next, we do aim to ensure that our letters are as accurate as possible, and take into account all the points raised by the customer. As you can see from the enclosed copy, your letter did state that you wanted to purchase £10,000 worth of gift vouchers. However, it would appear that this was an error, and I can fully appreciate the surprise and confusion you must have felt when reading our reply. Fortunately, purchasing £10 worth of vouchers is far less complicated than purchasing £10,000 worth. Our vouchers are available from any Next store. Thank you for taking the time and trouble to contact us about this matter, and I hope you will remain a much-valued customer of Next. Yours sincerely, Don Dury, Customer Service Manager. And that was the end of the correspondence. How great is that? From the book, Time Waster Letters. I want to read one more, because these are just so much fun. This is from May 26, 2003, a letter written to John Alexander, chairman of the Association of Small Historic Towns and Villages of the United Kingdom. And yes, that organization really does exist. Dear Mr. Alexander, I am a great admirer of your organization and think that you do good, honest work for the community and communities at large and little, in parentheses. I wonder if you can help. I have devised a new marketing idea specifically designed to promote the small towns and villages of this glorious isle. Would you be interested in having a look at it? Parentheses, the idea. I do hope so. With very best wishes, forward with small towns and villages. Signed, Robin Cooper. The reply came on June the 5th. Dear Mr. Cooper, thank you for your letter of May 26. I would be more than happy to discuss your marketing idea to promote small towns and villages in the UK. Please give me a ring to discuss this further. Yours faithfully, J.B. Alexander, Chairman, A-S-H-T-A-V, which stands for the Association of Small Historic Towns and Villages of the United Kingdom. On June 7th, Robin Cooper responded, Dear Mr. Alexander, many thanks for such a swift response to my correspondence. It did not go unnoticed. Thank you also for showing such interest in my marketing idea for small historic towns and villages of the United Kingdom. I'm afraid that I am unable to call you as I do not own a phone. And since I am not entirely sure how to operate a public phone box, I would prefer to write to you. I trust you do not mind. My idea for the marketing of small historic towns and villages of the United Kingdom is pretty simple. I have now acquired the rights to the popular figure Parmenu. No doubt you are aware of his attributes, so I won't bore you with them. Nevertheless, Parmenu is a much-loved and trusted character. Through a series of posters promoted by Parmenu, we can get the message across that small historic towns and villages are there for all of us to be enjoyed. We can also promote your organization with details of membership fees. I have designed a dummy poster enclosed, which I am planning to affix to trees and vehicles in my local area over the next few weeks. Are you ready to go with the idea? I look forward to hearing you from you. Best wishes, Robin Cooper. And what follows is this page of what look like child drawings. Poor Parmenu, the ping pong bat. Is that what it is? Or ping pong cat? Can't really read that. It says, there's more to small historic towns and villages of the United Kingdom than meets the eye. I should know. I'm an expert. And then the Association of Small Historic Towns and Villages of the United Kingdom, written in handwriting with a little jaggedy line around it, and various other things that look very childish. And then the letter, in return, from on June 10th, Dear Mr. Cooper, thank you for your letter of June 7th. I'm afraid that your idea holds no interest whatsoever for us, and I would be grateful if you would cease to correspond with me. Yours sincerely, J.B. Alexander, Chairman, A-S-H-T-A-V. This is the kind of material that this book is full of, and it's a lot of fun. The Time Waster Letters, written by listener Robin Cooper. And any of the listeners out there who have written books, please let us know. Oh, I'm a listener, and I've got a book. Yeah, we just announced it last week, in fact. The Best of 2600, A Hacker Odyssey. 900 pages of the Best of 2600, and it will be released just in time for the HOPE conference. And you can look on our website and days ahead for more details on that, www.2600.com. In the time we have left, let's take a quick look at letters, because I know a lot of people were curious about various things and wanted to get answers. Like, for instance, last week, we got a bunch of mail from people saying the live stream, both 24 and 128, are sounding terribly distorted. I have emailed WUSB about it, but I thought I'd let you know, too. It's sounding terrible. You sound like a droid. From Brill. Thank you, Brill, for calling me a droid. Appreciate it. But, yeah, we were having trouble last week. You know, I have to tell you, the fact that things work at all is a testament to the hard work people put in around here. But basically, you would not believe how equipment is strung together. And we have one bit of equipment that has to be turned off occasionally because it overheats. And sometimes when it gets too hot, you get the distortion. So it's not like those commercial establishments where you have a server room dedicated to this kind of thing, and it's all pristine and nothing ever breaks. Things are breaking all the time here, but we appreciate being told about it when it happens, and we try our best to fix it. If you have expertise or equipment or anything you'd like to send our way, please contact us. We'll be happy to accept. OTW@2600.com is our email address here at this radio show. Dear Emmanuel, just wanted to drop you a line to let you know that the USA cricket team are undefeated in Division 5 of the World Cricket League. Okay, that's information I didn't have. In fact, I didn't even know about any of those things. Didn't know we had a team, didn't know about the USA Cricket or World Cricket League. But anyway, looks like they're finishing in the top two and being promoted to Division 4. Being promoted to Division 4? Doesn't that mean they're like in Division 5, which is really far down? Don't know much about sports, but I know that. Well, anyway, don't want to rain on the parade. Anyway, check out some of the other countries in your group. Hope to one day see you at the World Cup. Signed, Bredo. Thank you, Bredo, for filling me in on yet another thing I know nothing about. I do know that Euro 2008 is beginning on Saturday. Yeah, Euro 2008 on Saturday. Yeah, now who feels stupid? Nobody knows what that means here, do they? All right, well, look it up. Yeah, look it up. You'll find out. Actually, in this country, you won't, but it's something I'm looking forward to. Hey, guys, I sent you an email on May 19th. I never received a response. I'm sorry. It does happen sometimes. Maybe it got caught by a junk mail filter or lost elsewhere. Anyway, my friend and I are trying to finalize our plans to travel to New York City for the conference, and I'd like to get this taken care of. I just hope you got a hotel room while they were still cheap. We pledged $100 on April 8th. If you were to listen to the archive show, you would hear that I am the Connor from Seattle discussed at around the 2750 and 3605 mark. I realize you're all busy with the WBAI pledge drive and planning the conference, but I would appreciate a response so that I know this issue is being looked into. Was April 8th? Hang on, I gotta look at the calendar. Ow, it hurts. Oh. All right, April 8th was, it's a Tuesday, so you pledged for off the wall, not for off the hook, because we have fundraisers on both of the stations. Put that back. Oh, I'm looking forward to this pain not being here. Okay, so you pledged on April 8th, which was a Tuesday. I realize you're all busy with the BAI fund pledge drive and planning the conference, but I'd appreciate a response if I know this issue is being looked into. Even if it's too late to do anything about this, please let me know so that we can acquire tickets elsewhere. Well, Connor, I looked so far at the names I've gotten from the pledge drive, and I didn't see your name. Now, did you pay by credit card? If you pay by credit card, your name should be on there. If you pay by check, then it takes a little bit of time. I know a bunch of other people were talking about their pledges not even being processed, and I think that's been resolved. If you made a credit card pledge or a debit card pledge and it didn't show up yet on your statement, that was a problem we were having, which has been resolved from what I understand. If that is still the case, please let us know. Just to be safe, so there's no disappointment or anything like that, if you did pledge for Hope tickets, send email to otw@2600.com. That way we can double-check with the people here at the radio station, make sure that your name is included. And what we'll do is we'll send you a confirmation. There's plenty of time, so don't worry about that. We'll send you a confirmation so that you have what you need to get into the conference in July. And for those of you who didn't pledge, well, you can pledge online, wusb.fm, but if you want to come to the conference, go to hope.net. There's all kinds of pre-registration information there as well. All right. We have other mail. Yeah, we have tons of mail, in fact. But not that one. Did I lose it? I lost it. Oh, my God. Okay, well, I lost a piece of mail that I was going to read. I'll bring it next week. Too many pieces of paper. That's the problem. Too much going on. We don't have enough time, obviously, to take phone calls this week. But next week, I think we should. I think we should talk about the real election race coming up. The November campaign, the next president of the United States, will it be John McCain or will it be Barack Obama? Because I don't think it's going to be Hillary Clinton. Very unlikely. Remember, my prediction is that she will be out of the race tomorrow at this time. In her mind. I mean, she's been out of the race in our mind for quite some time, but in her mind, she will actually be out of the race. I'm not a big fan of Clinton being vice president. I'd like to see somebody else. But who? Who would be a good selection for Barack Obama? How about that be the question that people send email and answer before it's actually answered anyway? OTW@2600.com. Tell us who you think would be a good vice presidential candidate for Barack Obama, and we'll discuss it next week. And you can call in, and we'll have a great time. All right. That's going to do it for the show this week. I've got to get back to stressing about various other things, including putting out the issue and organizing The Last Hope. And yeah, if you're not yet a part of The Last Hope, it's about high time you got involved, because it is The Last Hope, after all. We hope to see you there. That is the real thing. That was Ringo Starr, of course, right here on WUSB in Stony Brook.